You're listening to the Matt and Pat Show.
I'm Pat. He's Matt. And together, we're the Matt and Pat Show.
Welcome to the Matt and Pat Show.
Welcome.
I'm Matt.
I am Pat.
And today we're recovering from last week's WonderCon special.
You know, I missed one of my friends, Daria, at the WonderCon. She had a booth there.
She had a booth.
For her book, which is entitled A Legacy of the Pacific. And it's basically like a young adult sci-fi fantasy book.
Very cool.
And she was promoting it, and we didn't see her. I didn't
see half the people I wanted to see there.
And so I got a message on Facebook saying, wait, you missed us.
I got some info on Kamikaze. Kamikaze is going to be like in November. So I think it's going to be right around the same time as Long Beach Comic Con. So we'll have to find out what's the deal there. But I think we can probably do both, but we're going to be dead.
Will need shoes.
We're going to need marks.
Can we have like a camel? Can we just ride on the back of a camel through the...
I'm going to rent a little electric chair.
I like that. Oh, that would be brilliant.
Beep, beep, beep. Matt and Pat coming
through. I like
through.
That. We can put stickers, Matt and Pat stickers on the back.
Oh, my goodness. Well, before we get any further, let's say hi to our friends. Ethan Detmeyer over at Combat Radio. And we're going to be doing a dinner with him soon.
I'm already hungry.
It's a pre-dinner thing for our celebrity invitational.
We had a good dinner last weekend.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that.
Yeah, yes. Well, that was just, yeah.
Tacos.
Yeah.
Mmm.
Bob Davis over at Croza Surfboards. Will Sargent from Poltergeist. KM Service and MJ's Ice Cream and Treats. So speaking of dinner, we put up a little picture a few days
of
ago.
Of a gift.
Of you with the mystery box and the hat. So should I go into the backstory and
yes,
then you can explain
yes.
that?
Go for it.
Okay. Pat and I both have a mutual friend named Kevin. And
It's very mutual.
I've known Kevin for about 15 years now.
This friendship.
And Kevin stopped working at...
Where you worked.
One of my clients.
Yes.
And then went on to a different job. So we kind of lost touch for a while. And then we started, eventually at some point, we said, hey, we're going to go out to dinner. So you, Pat, and myself and Kevin went to dinner.
Yeah.
Paco's. And this was at Paco's, and this was several years ago. And he starts to
was
tell us...
Was that the one where I had the bad mole sauce?
No,
that was one of the other times we went out to eat with Kevin.
Yeah, but it was one of the times we
yes,
went to eat with him.
I should have had margaritas.
So so he started to tell us this story about how one year his aunt and uncle-in-law, I guess it is.
Something like that. They're in-laws in some regard.
Yes. Gave him some vanilla... flavored shampoo for Chris as a Christmas gift.
That's so manly.
And he's like, listen, you know, thanks for the gift, but you have to understand if I use this, I'm going to get beat up. So after that Christmas, every Christmas following, they always get him a gift.
The worst gift.
The worst gifts
possible.
Ever. And we're not talking worst gifts as in you're going to go out and just – you're going to go spend some money on – or as little money as possible. These people actually go out and they find
– out of their way to find the lamest
– the lamest gifts
gift
ever.
Possible.
And one year they gave him like three coat hangers. They gave him three coat hangers one year. They gave him moth repellent. Like mothballs or something the next year.
You know, I could actually use those for my books to protect against silverfish.
Keep the silverfish out, right. But this was his Christmas gift from these people.
That's what I want for Christmas, mothballs.
They gave him – one year they gave him a little notepad, which now he passed on
but
to
he
you.
He gave to me. And you know what? I
you still
treasure
have,
that notepad.
And going back to that
– I do use it.
Going back to that, so what happens
it's
is
on my desk.
Now every year we meet up with Kevin for our annual Paco's dinner.
And the infamous snow globe.
And he brings
– which is really sand.
He brings the gifts over to Paco's and he tries to pawn them off on us and you usually end up taking them.
I love them.
So yeah, one year –
it strangely kind of works out in my favor actually.
So one year he got a little snow globe with some sand in it or something like that. And that was it, I think.
That's all. It's just a little.
It was a
little, like a little Native American
snow globe.
Snow
sand,
globe with sand.
With sand in it.
And it probably cost, you know, 50 cents.
So he got. One year he got the box. And that's the box that he gave. Actually, he got that a few years ago.
And the box is actually several years old?
That's from a few years ago.
Oh, so it's not a recent box.
No, and so the box was they said, hey, you know, here's your Christmas gift, and he's, like, unwrapping it, and it's this box, and we'll have to take a picture of it. The decorations on the top don't match at all. They're off.
It must be hand-painted, hand-crafted, but I would imagine
whoever created it was
box.
Drunk.
Just
they were drunk when they made the box.
Didn't do a very good job of it.
Yeah, so that's a gift. And then he got the yarmulke hat, which is, as you said, it's a bowl.
Well, it's not a, I mean, it might be a hat for a little teeny gnome, right? It'd be a great hat for a little gnome.
A little gnome hat.
But I mean, I look at it and I thought, well, I'm going to put my wallet and my keys
junk
and my
in there.
Rosary and all my little pocket stuff right there.
Right there in the hat.
In the little holder.
In the bowl holder.
So, I mean, it's on my desk and I brought it home.
Yeah, so
when I came home, I put it on the desk and I took out all of my little pocket stuff and it all neatly fits into the little gnome's hat.
So now every year...
Kevin, and I have the box.
Kevin brings his gifts and he gives them to you. Last year, he had a little claw hand thing.
It was a petrified lizard's claw.
Petrified lizard's claw.
That was made into a...
Like a hanger.
Key ring.
Oh, key ring, right.
And he gave that to me. And, you know, I just thought this was like some totem of evil. Right? Some, like, you know, horrible totem of just foul... wickedness.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and so I didn't want to have it, but I couldn't. You can't turn down a gift.
I certainly...
You turned down the gift, but I am of the belief you just cannot turn down a gift.
I will always...
So I accepted it, and it now resides within my car.
See, here's the deal. I will
in the glove compartment.
See, I would accept a gift like that if it was, like you said, someone giving you a gift for your birthday or Christmas.
I
or whatever.
Can use that as a weapon, actually. If someone tries to maul me in my car,
I could
maul them back with this.
You could scrape them with the thing.
This talisman of lizardness.
That's funny. Well, the thing is, like I said, the reason I won't take them is because it's not Kevin giving you a gift. It's Kevin trying to get rid of a crap gift that someone else gave him. So that's why I don't take them. I don't want your crappy gift. Someone gave it to you, you accept it.
I like crappy gifts. I mean, well, you know me. You know all the little knickknacks and all the...
Yeah.
All that stuff in my possession.
Yeah, well, you got all that stuff on your desk.
I mean, you know, everywhere. My bookcase.
It's a good storage box for you.
I mean, you know, hoarder, right? I'm a hoarder of little knick-knacky things.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the backstory behind the box and the hat.
But you know what? I have to say that box is perfect for me because I have my rosary in there that after I pray, my little rosary goes into the box.
Well, you don't care what the top of the box looks
like. Chaplets are in there as well that I pray.
It's just sitting on your desk and you throw some stuff in there and you're good to go.
And I use it every day.
That's funny.
And the gnome hat.
That's funny.
And we had a great dinner.
Yeah, well, that's what it is.
And I had fiber bars earlier that day.
Fiber bars?
I went to Trader Joe's that week.
You had fiber bars.
And I had a bunch of fiber bars that were really good. And then I had beans later that night over dinner. So you can imagine.
So that's
that's why.
So that's why when
that's
I was
why it
driving
was so
you,
explosive.
That's why when I was driving you home, I had to leave the windows
that
down.
That was a sign of true friendship.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes, I had to leave the windows all the way home to air out my seat. Thank you very much, Pat.
Godzilla was there.
So who do we have today on the show?
We have Shad Meshad.
And who is Shad Meshad?
He is an old friend of mine.
Old
from
friend
way
of yours.
Back when. And I met Shad back when I was asked to join a men's spiritual group.
Okay.
And so at the time I was, late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I'll say 27, 28, somewhere in that range. And the point of the men's group was just for guys that were going to this winter secure parish to get together every couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we would just talk about aspects of spirituality and kind of men's issues in relationship to spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And the anchor of it, we all would read a particular book,
mm-hmm.
and talk about what we were reading and give our thoughts or whatnot.
Uh-huh, very cool.
And so I did that for a long time. But what was interesting was a lot of the guys that were in the group were much older than me at the time.
Sure, certainly.
they had families, some went through divorces, just a whole kind of this arc of life experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't feel like I didn't have that. I was too green or too young, in a sense.
Right, right.
And so...
No life experiences, huh?
Well, I mean, I per had se. Them, but it wasn't... It just...
Well, it wasn't, like I said, of a like family
it,
nature
it, it
or
It wasn't
something.
Just a full-fledged, I've lived a life,
right
type of
right.
a deal.
Sure.
And so I just thought, you know, I'm just going to bow out and just take some time to do other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always kind of kept in touch a little bit here and there with Shad. And so recently, I thought, you know what? This would be a good time to get back if the group is still going
mm-hmm.
with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I contacted Shad and I said, is the group still going? And he said, it is.
Oh, that's cool.
And in fact, it was that night. So I went over there and there's about, you know, 8 guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great because, you know, one of the guys in there, for example, Herb, he is a Vietnam veteran who was a Ranger, Special Forces. I mean, you know, he sits there with his cigar and,
yeah.
I mean, just hardcore.
Right.
I mean, I don't have those experiences.
Right, right.
But it's just great to listen to him and where he's coming from his perspective. And actually, like, all the guys in there, everybody has their own different nuances in terms of their life.
Sure.
And we all get together and we kind of talk about all this stuff, which... How often do guys get together, per se, and talk about something that's of a spiritual nature?
Yeah, right. Well, the typical thing is either the football game or that's the bar or the talk about the women.
Which is all well and fine, right? But it's just something uniquely cool.
About that group.
That every 2 weeks, like we had it Monday night, and we just had a great night.
That's cool.
So the thing about Shad also served in Vietnam, and he was a psychological counselor for the different soldiers.
Uh-huh.
And over the course of the war, right, you could just the experiences and just the events of war, as you can imagine, are pretty traumatic.
Sure, certainly.
Right. And how do soldiers cope with that?
Mm-hmm.
And so he came away from the war with this mission to really help the veterans, because especially the Vietnam era,
sure,
everyone was just pushed to the side.
Yeah, right. Right? Of course.
And there was no support whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So he really just got involved with this hardcore, and eventually he started his own foundation, Veterans Foundation, which is called the National Veterans Foundation.
Oh, wow.
And so I thought, we should have him on the show.
And he wrote a book, too, at some point, didn't he?
What's the book title? Book title. I just bought it. I found it on Amazon. Oh, here are my notes.
Captain for Dark Mornings.
Yes, that's it. And I actually bought a copy of it today on Amazon. And it's funny, too, because it's a used copy. And in the write-up, it mentioned that Shad wrote, you know, there's a dedication by the author, and it's rather long.
Uh-huh. Oh,
right?
Interesting.
And so I laughed. I said, well, shoot, I'm going to have Shad, you know, dedicate a new dedication to me that will be equally as long as this one, right?
That's cool.
So I should get that in a couple weeks and read it.
And you had mentioned to me off air that when he was doing this in Vietnam with the soldiers, at that point in time, there was no understanding of post-traumatic stress disorder.
No. No, not at all.
That had not come to light yet about the traumas of war.
So, I mean, that's going to be one of the questions I want to ask.
That's cool.
Right?
That's going to be
cool. That we can ask.
Yeah.
And, you know, some years ago, I remember I went to a function, and it was a play to help support, to raise money for his foundation. And the play was about these veterans.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the gentlemen there at the play... He won the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Oh, man.
And I don't remember his... I can't remember his name. And he was in a wheelchair, right, because of some war wound,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? But he was living here in downtown L.A., right, on the streets.
Oh, wow.
Here's this guy who won the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Right.
Right?
And he's homeless out on the streets.
Homeless out on, literally, Skid Row.
Right.
And, you know, Shad mentioned how he found him and literally, like, picked him up and cleaned him up and got him back on his, well, he was in a wheelchair, so I can't say feet, per
right,
se, but
right.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
got him back into society.
Got him back. And now, you know, all the stuff that he's done.
Oh, since then.
Right, since then. And you're like,
wow.
You know, how can we do that to people?
Yeah.
Especially those individuals that serve our country.
Well, you do it by first having a kind heart. And that's going to lead me into a little story I'm going to talk about in a minute about having a kind heart. But we'll do that after the interview.
Oh, well, I just meant the whole issue of how can you kick our veterans to the side?
Yeah, well, no, you shouldn't. You shouldn't kick anyone to the side.
No, irregardless.
You know, let alone the people that, you know, give up their life and their, you know.
That makes it all the more just
for outrageously our freedom and,
just,
yeah.
You know, what the.
Yep, yep. Well, a lot of people take for granted what they have based on what other people are fighting for. So, well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with Shad.
Awesome. So we're back, and we are here with Shad, Meshad, who is the president and founder of the National Veterans Foundation. And so we're really glad to have you here with us.
I'm honored to be here on your show.
And so we just want to just ask you some different questions. I guess the first question, how did you get involved in this mission of yours?
I think my baptism was in Vietnam. I was a social work psychology medical service officer in Vietnam in 1970, and you know, I had no idea. I just knew it was going to be a sensational year because I was one of the. I volunteered to go. I didn't have to because I was a sole surviving son, but for a number of reasons, I went. And you know, that time in the war. It was pretty crazy, chaotic, as any war is, but particularly the Vietnam War, and particularly towards the end after Tet of 68. And I knew that not only myself, but several million men and some women that had been involved in that were going to have really big problems readjusting back, in America.
Certainly, certainly.
And when I came home, it was, you know, it was like in the opening of my book, you know, the silence was deafening.
Mm-hmm.
And the society was pretty confused about the war and the warrior. They confused us. And so the society had, in general, majority had turned against the war, and therefore any product of the war. Well, we were actually the war fighters, and so we had a different homecoming than any veteran of any war in our history.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the opportunity when I came out to California to accidentally run into one of the top psychiatrists in the world that was lecturing over at USC. And I just happened to be passing through, heading San Francisco and trying to complete a 6 to 8 month tour with my girl and fiance at the time, just trying to unwind. And it was a God shot, so they say, on the streets. I had, was confronted by him to help them figure out how to deal with these Vietnam veterans. And you're going back 42 years. How do we deal with these young vets coming back? It would be like today, you know, with the Iraq and the Afghanistan veterans coming back and with all the chaos. But there was just a lot of confusion, and veterans weren't using the VA and so I got hired on a temporary slot in 1971, June of 71, to evaluate the largest VA hospital in the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's now called the West LA VA, but then it was two VA hospitals. Brentwood was the psychiatric part, and the other side was the medical on the other side of Wilshire.
Oh.
And Brentwood was the largest psychiatric VA facility in the country, and I just happened to be passing through, and Dr. May, Philip May, was acting head of the hospital until they could hire, you know, a director and a medical chief and a psychiatric chief and social work chief. And, you know, they were rebuilding to try to gear up for all these veterans coming back, but they weren't showing up. And so he brought me in to evaluate the hospital, and obviously there was very little there. And I gave him a commitment for the summer of 71, and I'm still here in L.A. 42 years later.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's a quick version. two national programs later, but the war goes on. The war of readjustment continues, and it's been going on since I got back. Number of conflicts.
How is it different now for the guys that are coming back from Afghanistan or Iraq, as opposed to the men and women that came back during your era of Vietnam? What's different, or is there really a difference?
There's differences and similarities. You know, in war and in near-death experiences, they're all similar. You know, you put yourself in harm's way, literally, in life and death situation in war, and from all wars, go back 3,000 years, there's definitely brain alteration and emotional alteration that goes on in that. But as far as the veteran coming back, Vietnam, we came back to the war in the States. You know, we fought the war in Vietnam and the war coming home, which no veteran has done that, to my knowledge, at least in America, in any of our wars. And we were considered baby killers and dope addicts and losers. And, you know, we never lost the battle, but we lost the war. So what does that tell you?
Right, exactly.
By the time everybody was coming back after the first few years and realized that what is this about and the leadership and all the chaos that went on and the leadership and the multiple deaths and the horrible things like the My Lai massacre and, you know, Khe Sanh and Tet of 68 and went on and on. The country was fed up and wanted to get back on business as usual and, you know, but it was tough for Vietnam veterans, and the majority were men. You know, it's different today because 13% of our soldiers now are women, but back then they were mostly clerical support and nurses in the medical staff.
Wow.
Where the women were, it was quite different, and they usually weren't in harm's way. I think a total of 6 women died in Vietnam, and that was through rocket attacks at MASH hospitals, similar to the one I was one of them that I was assigned to during my tour in 1970. And but the, you know, almost 60,000 men, the majority died in, you know, in combat, in friendly fire, and all types of other crazy things that go on in war, which is a significant number. And 3,000 MIAs, we brought home about 567 of those and left about 2,000. And that's another story. And then all of the, you know, almost 500,000 severely injured, you know, from booby traps and all the stuff during the 10-year war, because we had so many soldiers saturated in that small southeastern Asian country.
Chad, what is post-traumatic stress disorder? You know, what are the symptoms? How can it be alleviated? You know, what's the process on that?
We learned one thing out of Vietnam. We learned the term post-traumatic stress disorder. I was one of the pioneers, and actually talking to one of the main pioneers today, my colleague, Dr. Charles Figley, who wrote the first concerns about the diagnosis for Vietnam veterans coming back. But long story short, once again, that's another whole story, but after about 10 years, we finally came up with a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder, based on a research on Vietnam veterans in a 10-year study. And today that term is used like bipolar. You know, it's like it's actually gotten to be used too much. I mean, everybody's got post-traumatic stress disorder if they have a bad day. But the real definition of it, it's a catastrophic near-death experience that you survive, and how that affects the brain, and we've learned a lot about it. So that's kind of the main one of the main differences is the coming home and the reception. Now, you've experienced these two wars, these two 10-year wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, we've been out of Iraq maybe a year, and we're in a year or so we're going to get out of Afghanistan. But it'll be 12 years in Afghanistan and almost 10 in Iraq. Those two parallel wars, and over, you know, 5,500 killed and 147,000 severely wounded by these, you know, different type of warfare, more sophisticated types of killing objects like IEDs and so forth. We had booby traps and other things, but it gets more and more sophisticated. But the society has changed in the last 40 years. You know, our economics has changed, our politics have changed, the arrival of the internet and the computer and the acceleration of information that now is a split second or as fast as you can listen, you can see what's happening, you know, right now on the other side of the earth. If you pull up the internet, you can watch second-by-second news in any country in any part in the world. We didn't have that in the communication, and we came these men and women, and now women that are now combatants mixed in with men, which is had its problems too in that mix. But also the economic return coming back to, you know, the worst economic situation we've had in our country since the Depression. You know, the crash in '29 and all through the '30s. And not that we avoided a depression, but this recession has been terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're a capitalistic society. It's based on work and being compensated for your work. And if there's no jobs and you come back and you've done multiple tours, which is another difference between the majority of Vietnam veterans did one tour of duty, a 12-month tour, and these Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, many of them, minimum of two tours, and 4 to 7 are common because we didn't have the draft. That's the other big difference in these two
right. Wars,
you know.
Right.
Vietnam was based on the draft.
Correct.
And you served your time and you were gone. We have National Guard and Reserve serving over half of our fighting force over the last 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
These are people that have jobs and careers and everything and get pulled out from their families and thrown into heavy combat and come back and maybe, you know, have a year off and then they're back in there. They constantly got recycled. And we see the horrific data that seems to be a lot worse than the Vietnam data that came out many years after the war. But, you know, 22 suicides a day. With veterans in that, I don't think we had that back in the 70s and 80s with Vietnam vets. We may have, but we didn't have any data to it. And the divorce rate, the unemployment rate, all off the charts, you know, violence, things that we saw, but not at this pace. And a lot of it is based on, you know, the multiple tours and the high incidence of near-death experiences overlap with one tour, two tours, three tours, four tours, where, you know, I wrote a book about my year in Vietnam, and I flew in and out of combat. I wasn't a combatant, but that's pretty traumatic. I just couldn't imagine, as several of my employees that have done a minimum of two tours and several up to four tours, and the scars and the loss of friends and colleagues and their disabilities from it, both physically and mentally, in trying to truck on, so to speak, or as they say, live the dream.
Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Shad. All right, we're back.
Well, here's the question. How did you approach those that came back from Vietnam as opposed to nowadays? Because you mentioned the whole aspect of how information is so different and how technology has made it so easy to communicate. But back, like, how did you go about finding a lot of the veterans of your era to really help them?
Well, what was interesting in 71 when I hit the streets here in L.A. was we had 335,000 plus Vietnam era veterans in the county. That was larger than the city I was raised in, probably still, just Vietnam era veterans. And so they were, you know, the largest veteran population, number one, in this city. It's the largest city with veteran population, and in Southern California, it's off the charts. And it was a place where during that 60-70 hippie period, where many Vietnam vets migrated and lived sort of semi-homeless because of the climate here, and they were everywhere. I mean, it was just a massive journey to the West Coast because you could live outside pretty easily here in Southern California, pretty much year-round for the most part. And there were some job opportunities, you know, not a lot, but nothing like today. And, you know, so they were encampments all over. It was easy for me to find, and it wasn't easy, but there were large numbers, and whether they were trying to go to school or they were down at Venice Beach, they were all over the city. They were in clusters. They moved around like units, sort of the outcasts of society. So it was easy for me once I got embedded here. I knew where the pockets were, and, you know, at one time I had over 900 caseload as a therapist. Well, that's a joke.
Wow. Wow.
At least I had to corral them into rap groups from church basements all over the city. Back in the 70s, 60s, and 70s, they had free clinics where most of the veterans went because they really didn't go to the VA, and they felt they were angered towards anything government. So the VA was the last place they would go.
Certainly.
So they went to these free clinics. So I had groups at free clinics, legal aid centers, stuff that we don't have today per se. It was a different time, but it was easy to find the pockets. Now today they come back, and the National Guard and Reserve, so half of them are people that have been to school and have jobs and then got pulled into this war, thinking it was going to be, I think President Bush thought it was going to be 3 months and we'll be out of there, or 6 months. We catch Saddam Hussein and it's over. And that was like in 03 or whatever, and we thought we were going to get the big guy that, I'm blank right now, but, you know, the guy that started the war, 9/11, that we finally captured and killed 2 years ago, the guy that started all this. But the fact is that National Guard and Reserve were fighting that and leaving their families in, you know, the National Guard and Reserves have usually been used for floods and hurricanes and riots and
things. And they're,
like,
and they're
that.
Being thrown in these combat situations.
To the majority of the combatants in a war that is ongoing, one's still going on.
Right, right.
So their family stability from the economic crash, many of them lost their homes, they lost their jobs, they lost their wives, and they had families. And so many of them turned to other types of self-medication, which we've seen in all wars, but we see a higher incidence here. Because, you know, you've got to work, and your family's everything. If you lose them and you can't get work,
right.
How does that make you feel?
Right.
I mean, I don't think I have to describe it.
Right.
And particularly if you have nightmares and images of killing civilians to kill the Taliban, which many of them have had to do. You know, when you look at the Green Zone, it's in Baghdad, the highest kills in the Iraqi war. Or in the Green Zone. That's just unheard of.
Yeah.
You know, the war, because it was, you know, it'd be like fighting in downtown L.A. or Brentwood and Beverly Hills and going house to house. And, you know, and you're fighting a religious war in some ways, because whether you call them the Taliban or anything else, you know, dying in against the infidels is an honor. And we don't
right.
look at life that way.
And it's a whole different mindset.
It's not easy to give our lives up and say, hey, I'm going to go blow myself up, kill me 10, and I'm going to heaven.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly.
It's a whole different culture.
Right, right. What do you feel? What is the starting process for when someone comes back from war and they're diagnosed with post-traumatic, you know, disorder? Where do you start with someone like that? What's the starting process?
Well, first of all, it doesn't start that way. It's a long process to get diagnosed with anything, from any type of injury, whether it's emotional or physical. If you've seen or watched the news, you know, they've been hammering the VA for almost a million backlog in filing claims. And that, in this city, it's 457 days before your claim gets reviewed. Some cities, it's only 150. But once again, we have the largest number of veterans here, and the service delivery is super slow.
Wow.
So you may go up and be reviewed for PTSD. You may be denied, or you may be given a percentage, say like 10%. It's really not enough for you to live on. And you still got to get a job, and you still got to maintain yourself in a capitalistic society, which you've got to earn money.
That's
and
crazy.
If your trauma is eliminating you, or you can't focus on a job, you're not going to keep a job.
Wow.
And so there are all these things, there are multiplicity of things that hinder your growth in moving on and, or as they say, living the American dream, you know, having a job, eventually having a house, a family, and being able to enjoy some of the comforts of life. I mean, if you're diagnosed with PTSD or you have traumatic brain injury where those symptoms almost parallel, believe it or not, with PTSD, you know, you have some really serious symptoms. And when they play out, it can scare your family, your friends, yourself. You can either implode or explode. Many implode and take their lives. Some explode and go up and get on a tower and shoot people just to blow off steam. I mean, you know, these people forget that veterans, you know, are trained killers, regardless of what branch you are.
Right.
Your mission statement is search and destroy the enemy. And that's, everybody goes through basic training. Everybody goes through rifle training. And the more advanced soldiers, whether you're airborne, ranger, SEAL, special forces, you're trained more and more to be a mean, lean, killing machine, literally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as funny as that sounds, and it sounds like a song, it's really what you become. Now, when you get discharged, and if you have to go from a lean, mean, killing machine in 36 hours and go sit in a library and think that you're going to be okay and you're just going to sit like anybody else that would go read or listen, then you totally don't understand the process, because it's, we put in millions of dollars training individuals to be professional killers in war, and we don't hardly put a dime in deprogramming them.
Right.
You know, you're taught, we learned in Vietnam, or we learned in World War II in Korea, to teach soldiers to react, not think. And in your reactions, if you hear something, you could kill 20 innocent people just because you're not sure, but they're told that's okay. You know, if you're wrong and it's not women and children, it's the Taliban or it's Charlie or it's whoever, you're dead. So you don't take that, you don't take that chance. You just automatically react. Well, you have that same behavior when you come home. That's why you hear stories of people being disturbed in sleep and shooting and killing their loved one, or reacting to a noise, and, you know, all these type of flashbacks are sent off by this conditioning that you have in the military. When they set off, you react just like, you know, you would if somebody threw hot water on you. It's that instant. It's done and over. And if it's a horrific crime of just turning around and somebody startles you and you shoot them, you're in a lot of trouble. And, you know, I've been in a lot of trials and murder trials where the question is, was this person treated? I mean, we turned this person into a killing machine. We didn't bring him back and detoxify him, and he reacted pretty much normal as he would in the service.
Right.
He still has that in him, so how responsible is he?
Right. Right. Well, we got time for one more question. Pat?
Well, our last question is this. For veterans or families that are listening in, where can they go? How can they get a hold of your organization, Chad, for help?
Very easy. First of all, I'm sure through your website they'll be able to see our website.
Yeah, we're going to put up a link.
www.nvf.org. And we have our toll-free number, which is 888-777-4443. Pretty easy to remember. And you post that, and we're 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. And they can leave a message when we're not here, if we're overloaded. Some days, you know, we can't handle all the calls. Some days it's pretty easy to get through the line. But you get a live voice during those hours, and we can discuss anything and everything. And the great thing is we can direct you, you know, as a big, you know, there's a big conglomerate of places to go, but you don't know how to navigate it. It's like giving your kid a computer, and he only knows how to turn it on, but how do you get into all the applications, and how do you make it work? And that's, we do all that for you. We, you know, you need to get to mental health services, and you're in Tupelo, Mississippi, we'll find the nearest place for you to get to. If you're in New York or L.A. or whatever, there are places, and there are, and there's also telling it like it is. You know, the VA is the place you have to get filed into, but we'll tell you that it may be a year, year and a half. So you need to be busy and doing something positive during that year and a half other than waiting and sitting on your hands.
Right.
And we'll discuss talking to them or getting into a group like the First National Program I set up that's in its 33rd year, and that's the Vet Center programs. They've increased those from 200 to 300 centers around the country. They can go there. There's a lot of community-based organizations depending on what their needs are. So we're probably the best resource to get them started in the United States.
Awesome.
Awesome. Chad, thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, I appreciate being on the show.
Thank you, my brother.
I appreciate it. Same here, Pat.
I love you, Pat. And I will see you soon. We'll hang out.
God bless.
All right.
All
right. Thanks, Chad.
Thanks.
Right.
We'll be right back.
Hey, we're back.
We're back.
Hello.
And that was our interview with Chad. Awesome guy. Very cool.
He is, in every sense of the word. He is.
And even though...
I love him like a brother.
Even though...
He's like, a brother from another mother.
Like he said, he was never a combatant. He's been involved
he's
in all of this
it.
So
he's,
much.
He was on the forefront. I mean, he was in it.
Yeah, yeah. What an amazing person to go through that. Yeah, that's
I can't
really cool.
even. I can't even put my mind around some... I mean, you know, I'm killing a lion in Warcraft. That's, you know...
Yeah, yeah. And that's
I'm a warrior in that regard, but,
yeah, but
when it comes to the real deal...
The real deal, no, it's a totally different
so
thing.
That's just so out of my league.
And he also mentioned another website for people to go to after we talked to him after the interview, and that was veteransnetwork.org. So we're going to have to put that up on our website as well.
We will,
and,
yes.
And have
most
a,
definitely.
Have a links for that.
So if anyone who's listening, if you are a veteran or... know a veteran,
go out and help them.
You know, contact Shad's Foundation.
Yes.
National Veterans Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have that information on our webpage. And, I mean, just bring them the love.
Yeah.
That's really what it... know what? That's really what it's about.
Yeah, these people need to be welcomed back to society and taken care of. You know,
because they took care of us.
They took care of us in one way or another. So, yeah. Yeah, we need to help these people out. All right, so there's something I want to mention real quick.
Oh, yes, I know what this is. I know what this is.
You may have seen my...
we're switching gears here.
You may have seen my tweets about this last week or the post on Facebook.
I made a comment about it.
You
yes.
made a comment about it. But really what it comes down to is last week a fellow 501st Legion member had mentioned to me, it sent me a link about this guy named Dana Gould, who I have no idea who he is, and I could care less. And essentially there's this segment in his show about they're talking about cosplayers and also mentions a 501st Legion member, and his co-host goes in and says, well, I like history, but I live in the now. I'm not going to go out and dress up as some Victorian steampunk person, blah, 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 blah.
So they've never been to the really cool Groovematic Civil War reenactment up at Fort Tejon.
Yeah, maybe. And
we're going to have to go there.
We're going to go there. But also, you know, then talked about, in order for someone to dress up in costume and you know, put on a stormtrooper helmet or whatever, you know, must be a potential serial killer or repressed in life or, you know, can't deal with something in their life. And so they dress up like this in order to, you know, dive into this fantasy world and deal with their emotions, which is totally incorrect. So I thought it would be really cool for me just to sit down and say a little message directly to Mr. Dana Gould. So
go for it.
Here it is.
Bring it.
Dear Mr. Gould, my name is Matt Riggins. I am the co-host of this show that is now listened to in multiple countries. I'm an entrepreneur with a successful IT business for the last 14 years. I was married to my beautiful wife of 9 years at Disneyland. She is a teacher. I am a father, and our child has been on the honor roll for the last 3 years. I play Magic the Gathering, and I like radio-controlled cars. I love going to the movies and playing pinball games. I can sew patches on a jacket, and I know what a loop stitch is. I enjoy camping, photography, and riding my bike. I am a law-abiding citizen. I have never been arrested and support our local law enforcement. I like rock music. I listen to classical. I enjoy good company, friends, and family. I draw. I enjoy history, technology, and driving along the beach during a warm, sun-filled day. I am a human being. And also, I'm a 501st Legion member. On your show last week, you and a female co-host of yours found it amongst yourselves to belittle a group of people, saying very hurtful and resentful statements towards people that enjoy cosplay and helping others. The both of you made incorrect statements on your show, stating that in order to be a cosplayer or a 501st Legion member, that person must be a potential serial killer, quote-unquote, or have something in their life that they can't face, and thus retreat into dressing up as a fantasy fictional character because of some repression they've had. Mr. Gould, the reason I dress up in a Star Wars costume is to bring a smile to a child with cancer who will be dead the next time I visit Children's Hospital. I dress up because it brings joy and a sense of hope to those that don't have any, to a teenager who is permanently confined to a wheelchair, who can't enjoy a simple walk through a garden to enjoy the morning dew on the flowers. I dress up because it helps others. To say that I do this for any other reason, you are either completely misinformed or a bully. I resent your words, and I will certainly never listen to a show like yours that puts others down. Since joining the Legion, I've met hundreds of positive people who I now call my extended family and have made new friends for life. To everyone listening to this right now, do what you enjoy in life. If it makes you happy, do it. If it helps other people, do it. And most important of all, live life to the fullest. Enjoy what is fun for you. And don't ever let people like Mr. Gould or people on his show tell you who you are supposed to be.
I think that was well written and well spoken.
Well, like I said, it's directly to the point. And I said all those things in the beginning about myself because I wanted to illustrate a point. Point is that I'm not some crazy kid locked in a basement who now retreats or is repressed about anything in my life. I'm very happy with my life. I enjoy my life. I enjoy doing the show with you, Pat. I enjoy being a 501st Legion member.
I mean, here's the deal. I mean, we just went to WonderCon.
Yeah.
Right? We just went to WonderCon where you had anything and everything kind of there.
Yeah.
And
people dressing up for one reason or another, and it makes them happy.
And everyone's doing what they're doing because they're passionate about it.
And it was a great con.
And they're just good, wonderful people.
Good,
I mean, I play D&D.
Yeah.
Am I a freakazoid because I am a gamer?
No, not at all.
Or because I play Warcraft?
Not at all.
And well, come on.
And if you listen to Kiss, you're not a Satanist. Right? I mean, I've worked with Paul Stanley. I've had, you know, like deep discussions with this man, you know, the lead singer of Kiss for all these years. And he is one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. You know?
It's the difference between appearance and reality.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think it comes down to
being ignorant.
These people are ignorant and misinformed.
So for all those out there that are listening, that are gamers, that like to dress up, mm-hmm, in their awesome, super groovy costumes.
Yeah.
We embrace you.
And certainly.
We relish in that.
Yeah.
So you can love us, because mm-hmm, we love you.
I
love you, Matt.
I love you, Pat. I've been called a nerd on national TV by one of my clients, and it was the funniest thing ever.
Well, remember when Will called us nerds?
Will called us. What's up, nerds?
What's up, nerds?
Yeah, certainly.
Because he's a nerd. We're all nerds.
We're all nerds.
We're all misfits.
We're all geeks, and we have fun with it.
So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all gravy.
So that's my little public service.
I already ate my Dole, so I can't eat anymore, but I will have my green tea.
Yeah, but toast to green tea to that.
I toast our listeners wherever you are within this wonderful world.
In fact, we have 54 countries now listening to our show.
54 countries listening, like India.
Mm-hmm. Morocco.
We had a whole list. I need a desk.
Here we go.
I found it.
We got a few.
I was just going to say the Congo.
Congo?
We're being heard in the Congo.
Yes, I know.
Can we have a show in the Congo? Can you imagine that?
That's awesome.
We're going to fly to Congo and have a show in the Congo.
In the Congo.
Shad can go with us because he'll be like, don't touch that plant.
He'll know what it is, yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So do what you love, enjoy it, and have a
great
time.
Just be passionate about it, and be kind to others.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to being a tool.
Yeah.
Too many tools in the world.
So let's shift gears here, and let's talk about WoW a little bit.
Oh.
What's going on in World of Warcraft?
Last night was really fun. So one of my friends, his name is Crybaby.
Oh, that's funny.
And so last night, it was late at night, and I'm getting sleepy. I'm ready to go to sleep.
Are you repressed because you play WoW?
No, I just repress because I don't play enough WoW.
Because you don't get your drops.
That's right, you know?
Oh, and, I'm repressed. I'm going to go out and kill someone because I didn't get my ring.
Whatever, right? And he's like, hey, you want to go do something? I'm like, oh, I'm busy and looking for raid thing. He's like, you're always busy. I'm like, okay, hang on. I'll get out of here and I'll go with you, right?
Okay, cool.
And so I joined up with his crew, and his guild is called Dead Man's Party.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And so I go in there, and I'm in the vent, which allows you to speak,
yep.
right?
Yep, audio. Controller server, uh-huh.
And everybody was so quiet.
Okay, no one was talking?
No, no one was talking. And of course, I go in there. I'm like, hey, crybaby, what? I just start going off, right, in my Kernhoofian fashion.
Sure.
Right? And then everyone started loosening up.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, that's good. I mean, I was just like, come on. Like, where's the party?
Tell them to come listen to the show.
Oh, they will.
It's a dead man's party.
Well, you know, oingo boingo, right? Well, so we go into this raid, and we had it set on heroic.
Okay.
And it was a Cataclysm raid. So it's a previous expansion raid,
mm-hmm.
right?
And Two expansions ago. No, Cataclysm.
Yeah, this one, right?
One.
This one.
Yeah.
And I didn't do this. It was a special boss that you can only do on heroic.
Okay.
And her name is...
Which dungeon was it?
I don't know. Whatever.
Well, it's a raid, but
some
yeah.
dungeon out okay. in Twilight Highlands, which is... It's funny, because Crybaby's going to listen to this.
Oh, it's in Twilight.
He's going to be
cool.
like... He doesn't remember the... I don't even know it. No, but we killed Sinistra. Sinistra.
Okay.
S-I-N-E-S-T-R-A.
Yeah, Sinistra.
And she is the cohort, or the lover... of Deathwing.
Oh.
Right? So she's a big female dragon.
That's
right?
cool.
Male dragon, female uh-huh. dragon. But that is Oxnilia's and Nefarian's mama.
Really? Wow, that's cool.
So I was like, holy... And it's interesting because she supposedly, according to the lore, is the only one that could have mated with Deathwing.
Right.
Because he's... You know, almost like a silverback gorilla, but not quite.
Oh, okay. Right? I'm going to cut you off right now.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that. I have something for you.
So, we killed her.
I bought this that for you cool. a couple weeks ago.
Is this a gift?
This is a gift for you.
This is, and it's wrapped up in a bag.
Yeah.
You have that no, says, you have, oh, it's Los Angeles Zoo.
You have no idea
when
what
When you went
this
to
is.
The zoo.
Yeah.
What is this?
I bought.
Oh, my gosh. It's fluffy.
It's fluffy?
It is a... It's a gorilla.
It's a silver...
Look how... Oh, I love him!
It's a silverback gorilla.
This is...
I got you a silverback gorilla.
You have to take a picture with me and...
Yes. Well,
and,
yes.
and me. Me and me.
You and you.
Look at how cute he is.
That's your silverback gorilla.
Dude.
I saw that, and I thought, you know, Pat has said it enough times.
This is... Here... Oh.
Here, let's take a picture.
I love him.
Let's take a...
Oh, my silverback gorilla.
Here, let's do it like...
Bananas. I'll say bananas.
Bananas. There you go.
Oh, I love them.
So that's your silverback gorilla for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's so cool.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I forgot to give it to you last
week.
You know
what? I will bring him to every show now.
There you go.
And he will sit proudly with me.
With your green tea.
With my green tea, propping him up.
They had plenty of gorillas, but I had to go out of my way to find the silverback one. Well, in one of the gift shops, but it was hidden. Hidden in the back of the gift shop.
I love it.
I said, I need a silverback gorilla.
Wow.
So there you go. Now you can put them on the scale and see what it says.
452 pounds.
That's right. Anyways,
wow.
So back to your back to your silverback
so,
story.
So, you know, so we killed her triumphantly, and it was a fun fight. And everybody had just a good, grand old good time. And I was like, wow, so that's where... Oni and Fairy, where the little kids came from.
Wow, that's cool.
Never saw her before.
Yeah.
And she gave us a title, Dragon Slayer.
Nice. That's cool. Isn't it amazing how, you know, you're talking 7 years later? You know, when WoW first came out, we were in 40-man Molten Core.
Oh, don't remind me.
I'm just saying, you know.
Oh,
and that was
hours upon hours of
that was the big,
trying to kill Ragnaros.
That was, you know, and then...
And we never did.
And then Ani came into play, you know.
Oh,
the one you just...
The years.
How many years? How many times?
Of
trying to kill Ani.
Tanking her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember, level 60, right?
Yeah.
In level 60 gear.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, Kern, go get her.
Yeah.
And charging in.
Yep, wipe.
And you're like, here goes nothing.
Yeah. Trying it again, yeah.
So.
And now you soloed her.
And so. Now I have her mount.
And you got her mount.
I mounted her.
You got her. You got the Oni mount. That's awesome.
So that was a lot of fun last night.
That's really cool. So let's talk about, let's do our little movie segment here real quick.
My popcorn is ready.
We've said it a couple episodes ago, but unlike mainstream movies that are out there, if you're listening to this show, you already know what the movies are coming out next week, and you know what you're going to go see.
Oh, I definitely want to see Iron Man.
Iron Man 3.
I want to see Captain America.
Right, right. But what we're doing on this show,
Oblivion,
is we're talking about movies from the past that people probably haven't seen.
Yeah, because we're sitting here on the couch.
We just sit here, fire up Netflix.
What looks interesting.
Watch something, and we're commenting on it. So we actually saw this a while ago, but I had watched it, and I thought it was such a great piece that I said, you got to watch this.
And it really was.
And you sat down and watched it, and it's called The Parking Lot Movie. And what it's all about, well, I'll let you describe it.
Well, it's about the attendants who are in charge of working within this car parking lot.
And it's next to a university.
And so my history is, if you will, working in retail for 10 years as a clerk for Trader Joe's while I was going to school.
Yes.
So I have some familiarity with working
that kind of
in terms of, working with the public, general public.
Right.
And the good and the
Well, there was bad aspects. There was bad aspects to it.
Right? Now, I was trying to choose a genteel word.
Well,
for it.
The thing is, what's interesting about the parking lot movie is it's not so much. I mean, you were working in Trader Joe's. People walk in there and they're like, Trader Joe's, that's a respectable store, and so at least they're going to have a certain, mentality about what kind of people work there.
Says the one that's never worked there.
Yeah. Well, possibly, but I'm just saying from a store standpoint. From the outside,
sort of.
To a certain extent. Right. But at this, I'm saying,
But when you're a parking lot attendant.
Here you have this pristine university, and you've got people showing up, and they're all dressed preppy and everything, and their families are coming for graduation. And you come down, and here's this guy, and he's wearing like a t-shirt and a jeans, right? And they're like, do you know how to park a Prius, right? He's like, yes, I know how to park a Prius,
right? It's the exact same thing. Appearance versus reality.
Mm-hmm.
What people think they know about a particular person, just based on their own assumptions.
Yeah, and these
which is totally wrong.
Yeah, and these kids go through this whole experience. Different attendants, and they have to sit in this tiny little booth, and it's raining.
And some of the attendants, they were studying for example, I remember the one gentleman
who was
working on his master's in philosophy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so some of these guys. Are very brilliant,
very
smart. And
they're
doing it because they actually, there's something about that job that they really loved.
Yes, and it kind of forms a little brotherhood for them as well, And so these people come in.
I have a brotherhood with my silverback gorilla right now.
These people come in and they have this, big luxurious SUV, and they look, they just totally look down on these guys, like they're nothing, like they're the scum of the earth.
That's exactly like the time. You're probably going to lead into it, but the time where the ladies.
Oh, I know what show you're talking about. Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead and tell it.
So I'm ringing up customers.
You're working the counter.
And I hear these two ladies get into my line, and they're discussing Shakespeare's Othello.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so happy that someone's discussing Shakespeare while I'm at work.
Right.
I was like, this is great.
Dive
because
into the
here's
conversation.
The deal. My background is one of philosophy and literature.
Right.
And I was working at that particular point at Trader Joe's as a part-time job while I was working full-time as a high school teacher teaching a course on Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished up with my customer. Now I have the two ladies. And I didn't want to be rude with my lead-in. Basically saying, like, I'm, listening into what you're saying.
Right, right.
And I said something to the effect of, like, oh, I couldn't help but overhear that you were discussing a play.
Uh-huh, right.
And the one lady turns to me and says, oh, you wouldn't understand what we're talking about.
Wow.
And I was quiet for a moment, and I couldn't let it. I just couldn't let it go.
Couldn't let it go.
And I said, well, actually, ma'am, I overheard you speaking about the Shakespearean play of Othello. And I have a degree in literature. And I'm currently teaching a high school course on Shakespeare.
Uh-huh.
Like, it was just the ultimate slam.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And she had this mortified look on her.
Well, deer in the headlights?
They both had this mortified look. And they both, their mouth did open.
Wow, that's funny.
And they did apologize. She said, you know what? I am so sorry.
Well, that's
that
nice.
I thought
that's good.
That's good. I said that.
That's good.
And so, in that sense...
Okay, that's cool.
That was cool.
That's cool. They took the high road, and they said, listen, we were wrong. We'll admit it.
That's like... Okay, just another quick example, uh-huh. Right? Since I'm on my rant now.
Yes. Uh-huh.
My philosophy teacher, professor, came into the store. She came into my line, and we started speaking philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting... After she left, the next customer was this one guy, and he looked at me, and he said, a woman speaking philosophy?
Oh, oh boy.
And I looked at him, and I said, well, actually, sir, she's my philosophy professor, on top of which she's the department chair of the philosophy department of the university here.
Maybe it was Mr. Gould.
Probably his dad, right? And he just had this look of like, oh, I wanted to like punch him in the face, really. Yeah. But I wasn't wearing a 501st helmet, right?
Yes, that's right.
My gosh. Yeah. Right? But yeah. I mean, that just goes to show you.
You're the repressor.
That movie.
The parking lot movie. Back to it.
Was really cool because it just showed about how people.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
In society get judged.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it really harkens back to what Chad was saying earlier
mm-hmm.
about these men and women that come home and everybody has a preconceived notion about
yes.
about them.
Yes. Right. Like they can just
– Like
just one day they're shooting a machine gun and blowing people to bits and the next day, hey, just take a job and be a normal person. I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. Yeah. Yep. Yep. The scum of the earth, right?
Oh, I tell you.
Defending our freedoms and our lands.
If only we could be as lovely as a silverback gorilla.
Yeah, there you go. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, we're back.
We're back. Hello. And the silverback gorilla is right next to me.
Yes.
I love him. He brings me much joy. I should leave his tag on, too. Or maybe I'll take it. I don't know. Because sometimes they're worth, like, you know... Well, I'm not going to sell them, so I'll just cut the tag, right? Why would it?
So
anyway.
Close up the show, Pat. What do you got?
What a good day. All right, here's some tips for better sleeping.
Excellent.
Because how many people that we know have sleep deprivation or insomnia or whatever
Something
issues,
like that,
right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
So here we go. 10 tips. Number one, maintain a constant daily schedule.
Yes. That's your internal body clock.
Well, that could be pretty tough. But anyway, there's your tip number one.
Yes.
Number two. Reduce caffeine intake.
Of course, yes.
Number three, turn off the computer and or television.
Yes, and you know why? Because they've proven to a certain extent that the bright lights that emit from screens, computer screens, monitors, your phones, actually stimulate the brain.
Yes.
And keep it awake.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, don't go to bed on a full stomach.
Yes, that's true.
Number five... Don't go to bed on an empty stomach.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't know that one.
I didn't know that either.
So make sure you eat lots of ice cream.
Or very light.
Number six.
A carrot or something.
Engage in regular exercise.
Yes, of course.
Number seven. Limit beverage consumption before bed.
Uh-huh, yes.
So you don't have to get up and...
At 3 in the morning.
I have to wee-wee.
I have to go to the bathroom.
Wee-wee.
Uh-huh.
Number eight. Keep your bedroom dark and quiet.
Or put foil up like Rich did during
the
day.
That worked. Number nine, invest in a comfortable mattress, pillow, and bedding.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I bought a new bed because I actually crushed the bed frame of my previous bed. Literally, right? I crushed it because I'm a silverback gorilla. So I bought a new one. Oh, it has made all
the difference
in the world. I love it.
That's perfect.
I love my bed.
You love your new bed.
And last but not least.
Final.
It says, go to sleep and wake up using your own internal
body clock.
Clock.
Yes, and the reason why is because each person is different, and each person requires a different amount of sleep. Like for me, not to be grumpy, I need 9 hours of sleep. Sometimes I don't.
And you're Grumpus Maximus.
I'm grumpy or I'm messing up the show or something else.
Grumpus Maximus.
And it shows. So, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Don't set an alarm when you wake up. That's when you're ready to go. Your body will tell you when you're ready to wake up.
Yeah, I just take naps.
That helps, too.
I love my naps.
That helps, too.
That's point 11. I'm going to add that. Take some naps.
Take some naps.
And with that, we're done.
We're done with today's show. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Shad, wherever you are out there in the world.
Thank you again, Shad, for being on the show. And also to everyone that's in 54 countries we're now seeing that are listening to our show. We appreciate it. We love it. Go to Facebook. Hit like. Go to Twitter. Hit follow, whatever you're on.
And thank you for my silverback gorilla. Makes me want to cry.
We'll see you next week.
Woo!